You're tuned to WFHB.
Volunteer powered.
Listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community and supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM, reporting live for WFHB. This is Barbara Fuqua.
And I'm Scott Weddle. This is the Daily Local News for Wednesday, September 5th, 2018.
A third of the tree species that we have here may actually increase in abundance. The conditions may be more favorable for them. About a quarter or so of those of the tree species that we have will decline in abundance, and then some will be unaffected.
In today's feature report, WFHB correspondent Norm Holy speaks with Dr. Richard Phillips of the Purdue Climate Change Research Center about the effects of global climate change on Indiana's forests. That's coming up later in the program.
Also coming up in the next half hour, abusing 911, the cost and impact of fraudulent and non-emergency calls on emergency services, on a new edition of our Consumer Watchdog segment, Better Beware. But first, your daily headlines.
The Indiana Department of Transportation will close Highway 37 ramps at the North Walnut Street interchange tomorrow. NDOT says the closure is needed for final paving on the ramps, which will be closed from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. on Thursday. The closure will affect the North Walnut merger onto Highway 37 north of Bloomington. NDOT will detour motorists to the Highway 37 and State Road 4546 interchange. NDOT says all construction activity is subject to weather delays. The National Weather Service predicts thunderstorms throughout the day tomorrow and into the weekend.
Indiana motorists are paying 10 cents more for gas than they were a year ago. That's thanks to statewide taxes aimed at improving roads in Indiana. Motorists are paying 49 cents in taxes and fees per gallon of gas, according to a report from the South Bend Tribune. Indiana places third in the country in the largest year-to-year difference in gas averages, falling behind Hawaii and California. The higher gas prices are the result of a new statewide infrastructure tax. That tax added an additional 10 cents per gallon to the price of the gas since last summer. Prices at the pump are expected to continue rising, with another penny being added this year in inflation adjustment. Indiana gas stations bordering on other states are at a disadvantage as motorists can cross state lines to buy cheaper gas. That could particularly affect sales of diesel fuel widely used by the trucking industry. Gas prices are expected to drop off for the rest of the year as service stations switch to less expensive winter fuel blends and driving decreases after vacation season, according to Motorists Association AAA.
And Indiana Governor Eric Holcomb announced his plans yesterday to spend an additional $1 billion on infrastructure projects across the state. According to the governor, that money is to be raised through toll increases on heavy-duty commercial vehicles. The governor's office announced yesterday they had concluded renegotiating an agreement with the company that operates the Indiana Tollway. Under the new terms, which will need to be approved by the Indiana Finance Authority, rates charged on vehicles with three or more axles will increase by 35% next month. Holcomb's office says the tollway operator will pay the state the $1 billion in three separate installments. Holcomb also says the state plans to allocate over half of those funds to speed up the completion of Interstate 69.
Fall midterm elections take place 9 weeks from today. Election season culminates in the general election on November 6th. Voter registration throughout Indiana ends a month prior on October 9th. And early and absentee voting begins the following day, October 10th. Indiana law states that early and absentee voting must occur 28 days before an election, but Columbus Day on October 8th this year will push back the early and absentee voting period. September is National Voter Registration Month. Indiana Secretary of State Connie Lawson is reminding eligible voters to register by going to www.indianavoters.com. On the state's website, indianavoters.com, residents can register to vote, file a change in address, and check their polling places. Early and absentee voting end at noon the day before Election Day on November 5th. Historically, voter turnout during midterm elections is usually lower than during presidential election years, but pollsters are expecting a higher than usual voter turnout this fall as Democrats aim to take the majority of seats in Congress. During 2016 general election, Indiana had nearly 5 million registered voters, with a little over half of those registered casting a ballot during the presidential election. In this year's May primary, the Secretary of State's office estimates nearly 4.4 million Indiana residents were registered to vote. In Indiana, those who are not currently incarcerated on felony charges can still vote, and voters do not need an ID to cast a ballot at their polling places. Voters can check their voter registration online at indianavoters.com. The deadline to register to vote or to file a change in address is October 9th. Early and absentee voting begins on October 10th, and Election Day is November 6th.
Over half of Indiana University fraternities will be facing a hard alcohol ban. Yesterday, the North American Interfraternity Conference voted to ban hard alcohol at member fraternities. Member fraternities have until September of 2019 to implement the ban, which prohibits the serving of spirits unless distributed by a third-party vendor or caterer. The Associated Press reports that the rule comes after a series of alcohol-related deaths at Penn State and Louisiana State University fraternities last year.
The City of Bloomington Utilities continues its mercury and asbestos cleanup efforts at the decommissioned Griffey Lake Treatment Plant. James Hall is the Assistant Director of Environmental Programs at the Utilities Department. In a report to the Utilities Service Board last night, Hall said 125 pounds of elemental mercury have been removed from the Griffey plant so far.
That's not including any kind of the material that had contamination on it. They're still in the process of kind of bagging that stuff up and trying to see where it falls in characterization, if it's hazardous or non-haz, or where that's at. That includes some of the piece of equipment that was in the building and concrete that was on the floor there. We've sectioned the facility off into three different areas. The pipe gallery head house is one, and then the pump house is another, and then the wet well is a separate area. And so we're kind of in a limbo, and we're having a meeting this Thursday to kind of talk about how to proceed forward because of water intrusion, groundwater and rainwater coming into the building.
Bloomington Utilities board member Gene Kapler asked Director Vic Kelson whether recent rains may have carried mercury off the plant site.
It's certainly possible. We don't have any evidence of it, but that will certainly come up when we get farther into the process of remediation. And once the building is demolished and we start working on the site remediation plan, we'll have to look at groundwater and see if there's any possible impacts on groundwater from, you know, the mercury or anything else that was in the building. But we'll be looking at that.
The Griffey Lake Treatment Plant was decommissioned in 1995, and the City of Bloomington Utilities Department began a cleanup of mercury leaked from broken metering equipment last year. New mercury leaks were found when work crews began moving old equipment around in preparation for the plant's demolition. Asbestos removal was already underway at the plant. Assistant Director James Hall says that asbestos removal efforts continues.
But they're continuing to work, and they're currently removing asbestos right now from the very top floor and then the main floor. So we're hoping to get most of that done by the end of this week.
Bloomington Utilities added warning signs and 24/7 security guards to keep people off the property during the cleanup. Last night, the Utilities Services Board extended the department's security contract through the end of the year. Board member Kapler noted these measures come with a high price tag.
We're looking at $6,500 a month for the lighting for this site. And the total bill by the time we get done is pretty hefty. And I know that as a taxpayer, I hate to see my money going to address people just getting on site when it's clear that there's not supposed to be trespassing, and then we're talking about environmental hazards as well. And so I just would encourage anyone who feels like going into the plant to please don't do that. This is costing a lot of money and it's dangerous.
Hall says the City Utilities Department has also stepped up outreach about the plant's multiple hazards to the nearby Blue Ridge neighborhood. City of Bloomington Public Works Director Vic Kelson also told the Utility Service Board last night that contractors have been examining the city's water treatment plants. Kelson says contractors are looking for ways to improve water output in the face of increasing demand. He says the contractors' reports go hand in hand with two utilities rate reviews currently underway.
We are still in the process of having a contractor work through the numbers for the rate review. The rate review will be a cost of service study for sewer and also a rate review based on a capital improvement plan for sewer. And then similarly, we're doing a rate review for the stormwater fee in order to pay for some major capital infrastructure projects. So
Kelson says those rate studies should be finalized this fall. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Barbara Fuqua.
And I'm Scott Weddle. Support for WFHB comes from Cardinal Spirits Distillery, located on the B-Line. Cardinal Spirits has opened a new kitchen featuring local, seasonal food made from scratch to complement their craft cocktails. Dinner available Tuesday through Saturday at Cardinal Spirits, 922 South Morton Street.
Support for WFHB comes from listeners like you and from IU Health Foundation, where local gifts stay local, serving patients for a healthier Bloomington. In today's feature report, WFHB correspondent Norm Holly speaks with Purdue Climate Change Research Center Dr. Richard Phillips about man's impact on Indiana's forests.
This is Norm Holley for WFHB, and today I'm interviewing Dr. Richard Phillips. Could you describe the Indiana forests over time for us, please?
Sure. Indiana forests have changed quite a bit over time, and if we were to go back in time about 100 years, we'd see a forest that's very different than the one we see today. Let's go back 200 years. In fact, we'd see probably about estimates of about 90% of the state was once forested, and then around the time of European settlement and slowly thereafter, much of the forest area has been cut and developed, and such that in around, let's say, about 1900 or so, the state had about 4% forest cover, so a significant departure from the 90% of the forested area in the pre-settlement times. A lot of that forest has rebounded and recovered, and that was in part related to the establishment of Forest Service and a number of other agencies that have sought to protect forest land. And now we see about, you know, in the southern part of the state where most of the forests still occur, we see about 25% of the land area, for example, about 5 million acres are now forested. So we're not where we once were, but we've certainly rebounded from in part from the periods where we had very little forest across the state.
Now, the 25%, does that represent 25% of the whole state or just 25% of the
state? That's just in the Southern Hills region. So in the region where most of our forests, I don't have off the top of my head what the total number is for the entire state. It's probably about 10 to 15% if I had to guess. But most of the forests, majority of forests, or at least the big contiguous forests, exist in the Southern Hills region, which is sort of south of Indianapolis. Of the Southern Hills region, about 25% is forested. In the upper parts of the state, it's much less.
So considering the state forests and the private forests, are we growing? Are we increasing the number of trees per year, or are we decreasing?
A lot of the state in the Southern Hills region is public forest, and that's something that separates the southern part of the state from the rest of the state. But a significant amount is also private forest, family-owned forest parcels. And in general, those are, you know, managed very differently than the public lands. The private lands, we don't have great data on what landowners are doing in terms of, or what they're intending to do in terms of keeping their forests, so we don't have as much a good enough sense of the management priorities of those landowners. But in general, there's been a slow but steady increase in forest area, and I'd say that Indiana forests overall are in pretty good health.
So tell us about the nature of your report.
So I worked, as a highly collaborative effort, and I worked with researchers and scientists from Purdue University and the U.S. Forest Service and Indiana University as well. So Song Lin Fei was from Purdue, was another one of the lead authors. Leslie Brandt is at the U.S. Forest Service. He's also a lead author. And then we had contributions from a number of other scientists, David Pauly from Indiana University, Patrick Zollner from Purdue University, Mike Saunders from Purdue University, Keith Clay from IU, and Louis Iverson from the Forest Service as well. So it was a truly collaborative effort amongst Purdue, Indiana, and Forest Service scientists.
Tell us some of the major factors, that some of the high points of the report.
There are really three takeaway points from the forest report. One is that forests are going to look different in the future with owing to climate change. A second takeaway point is that our forests are likely going to function a little bit differently, too, in large part because of the differences in the way they look. And when I say look, I mean really the differences in the dominant species that are likely to occur here. And then the third one is that there are likely to be economic impacts as a result of the changing dynamics in the forests. So on the first point, our forests are likely to differ in the sense that there will be many species that are likely to increase in abundance and those that are likely to decrease in abundance. And so that's going to shift around the types of communities that we have. So we did a preliminary analysis of how the forest may look in 50 to 100 years, making some assumptions about the preferences of different tree species for different environmental conditions based on existing inventory data that we have from all around the state, and in fact, all around the United States. And what we've been able to do is we change the climate, or we allow the climate to change as it's determined to shift according to our climate models. And then we look to see how the species preferences map onto those changes in climate, those predicted changes in climate. And then we can make some predictions about which tree species will do better under climate change and which species will do worse. So it's really an issue of winners and losers under climate change, not all species do poorly just because it gets, you know, warmer and hotter, for example. So the findings that we found is that about a third of the tree species that we have here may actually increase in abundance. The conditions may be more favorable for them. About a quarter or so of those of the tree species that we have will decline in abundance, and then some will be unaffected. Many will also be unaffected by the changes. And to summarize the changes that the climate models predict, and these are climate models that are run for the entire United States, or actually for the entire globe, and then are statistically downscaled, meaning there's some techniques that you use to then provide resolution on how the climate specifically will change for Indiana. The climate models suggest we're likely to experience warmer and wetter conditions. And while that typically means more growth and more favorable conditions for tree productivity, the increases in precipitation are largely going to occur in the winter and in the early spring before the trees have leafed out. So we're probably going to have wetter springs, and our forests will be more prone to flooding. And so we may also experience drier midsummer conditions, more summer droughts under a warming climate. Trees such as American beech, northern red oak, shagbark hickory, sugar maple, and tulip poplar are likely to not do as well, at least projected for over the next 50 to 100 years, under these new climate conditions.
So I'm just curious, of that list, for example, the tulip poplar is the state tree, right?
Yes, that's correct.
And in the state forest, as opposed to private forest, they're preferentially cutting the tulip poplar. As the climate warms, is that simply going to hasten the exit of the tulip poplar from Indiana?
I wouldn't necessarily say that. So the tulip poplar actually is doing well presently, in large part because the oaks and some of the hickories are not doing as well in terms of regeneration. And so currently, trees like sugar maple and tulip poplar are doing quite well and are in a position to take over the canopy when some of our older oak hickory trees die. However, our modeling analysis suggests that the conditions that are likely to occur, these warmer, drier conditions, are not going to be particularly favorable for some of these species that are water demanding, like tulip poplar and sugar maple. So even though those trees are likely to be the next canopy dominance, meaning the next ones that take over when these really old oak hickory trees that are not regenerating die, the lack of water that was likely to occur in the midsummer for a water demanding species is likely to could hasten its decline, and then combined with some other factors like management and cutting could certainly accelerate that process. What's hard to know is how management will actually respond to some of these climate changes. So there are all sorts of different forces at play, whether it's market forces or just having a forest management plan that's targeting certain species. And so there are likely to be efforts underway to try to save certain tree species from going extinct in the state. So I wouldn't say necessarily that tulip poplar is on its way out, only that it's likely to be more stressed under the new climate conditions, and unless actions are taken, there's probably little that can be done to sort of reverse that.
Tell me about the future of maple syrup industry in Indiana.
Yeah, one of the things that our report highlighted, and we don't have a lot of data on it, wasn't the main focus of our report, but we tried to look at some of these economic sectors that might be affected, and in particular the sugar maple industry was one that we highlighted in the report. Maple trees in general are increasingly becoming more dominant in the state and are poised to take over in the canopy once the oak hickories die back, some of the older oak hickories die back across the state. So there's a lot of maple that's coming in. Those two are also water-demanding species. So we don't know that increases in dry conditions are likely to affect maple sugar production, but what we can say is that there are very specific conditions under which trees run sap. And the window of time in which we harvest those trees is probably going to be shortened. It's probably going to be moved up a couple of weeks, and that's due to the extended growing season, the warmer conditions. But we don't have a good sense of how the conditions of the cold nights and warm days, which are critical for sap production, are going to change. But in all likelihood, there's the potential, at least, for an earlier tapping season, potentially a shorter tapping season, and that certainly would have impacts on the economic viability of the maple industry.
The Daily Local News is brought to you by MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar power generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility. Found locally at 812-334-4003 and on the web at mpisolarenergy.com.
Up next, our weekly consumer watchdog segment, Better Beware.
Welcome to Better Beware. Here's your consumer watchdog from WFHB Community Radio with the latest information and helpful hints designed to keep your head out of the clouds, your feet on the ground, and your money in your pocket.
Something catches on fire, or there's an automobile accident. Somebody has a medical emergency. A crime is in progress, or a friend is suicidal. Shots are being fired. There's a fight. A drunk driver is weaving all over the road. When people are in danger of being hurt, you know what to do. Grab your phone and call 911. But when you call for emergency services, you want immediate response. And sometimes you don't get it. because the 911 dispatchers are busy with calls they should never have gotten. You would be amazed at how many people call the famous emergency number for things that aren't emergencies. I am, and so are the police. Up in Indianapolis, it's become a crisis, with as many as 40% of the 911 calls they handle being other things, running from ridiculously stupid to stupidly ridiculous. Motorists call when they get lost to ask for directions. A woman called 911 to report a large spider on her ceiling. Another lady called to report peanut shells on the ground. She wanted the police to come out and pick them up because she was afraid her dog would have an allergic reaction to peanuts if he ate them. A guy banged the emergency dispatcher's ear for 3 full minutes because he was in a Rally's hamburger joint and they served a drive-up customer before they served him. One day, Indianapolis police got 50 calls from the same number, and it turned out to be a child playing with an old phone. The parents thought the phone was useless because the account was no longer valid, but any phone that can turn on can dial 911. Then there are the pocket dials, sometimes known as butt dials because people put their phones in their back pockets and sit on them. When a 911 dispatcher gets a call and nobody says anything, or the call is quickly hung up, they have to send somebody to check it out. It could be a crime in progress or a medical emergency when the caller cannot speak. Imagine if somebody you love had a heart attack, a bad fall, or an overdose, and you called for an ambulance and were kept on hold for a minute or two or three, when every second counts, because some damn fool called 911 to report a missing garbage can. It happens, and it shouldn't. If you're reporting a fraud, or a loud party, or fireworks, or a barking dog, or just have a question about something, don't call 911. There's always a non-emergency number you can call. In Monroe County, you can call the sheriff at 349-2780, or the Bloomington Police at 339-4477. Look those numbers up now and store them in your phone and help solve this epidemic of 9/11 abuse by spreading the word to your friends and family, okay? I'm Richard Fish for WFHB News and Public Affairs.
Better Beware comes to you from WFHB Bloomington, Indiana. Find all our episodes at WFHB.org. If you can help put the kibosh on a con, email beware@WFHB.org. Remember, swindlers never give a sucker an even break.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Andrew McCurran, Annie Aguiar, and Wes Martin, along with Sarah Vaughn for Cats Week in partnership with Community Access Television Services. Better Beware was produced by Richard Fish. Our feature was produced by Sarah Vaughn.
Our engineer today, Wes Martin. Theme music provided by Ben Lumsdaine, Danny Graff, and Scott Schmadeke. Executive producer is Wes Martin. And for WFHB, this is Scott Weddle.
And I'm Barbara Fuqua. Thanks for listening to Indiana's only volunteer-powered, listener-supported, independent daily news program.
You can be a part of our award-winning news team. Send inquiries to news@WFHB.org. And stay tuned for The Hijabi Diaries, a new series on WFHB examining the experiences and issues facing Muslim women. The Hijabi Diaries are coming up next.